हरिः
ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 48, chapter 10, The Nature of Fruitive Activity. Sri Krishna continued, as long as the jiva acts through his senses and creates various destinations, he will attain a variety of bodies. Like, as the destination is the goal. So when you act through the senses, you're going to have goals. Those will give you destinations that you're trying to attain. And because of that, you have to have a body to obtain it. Right? A material body. As long as such bodies exist, he will remain dependent on karma. As long as the jiva is dependent on karma, he will fear the controller of karma. Those who devote themselves to material rituals are bewildered and subject to lamentation. When there is agitation and interaction in the material modes of nature, I take on various forms of maya, as the time for enjoyment, the body suitable for enjoyment, as the scriptures proclaiming karma, as the places giving enjoyment, as causes of transformation, and as rules for creating enjoyment. Right? So all those various aspects are Krishna. So he's dealing with everything that is controlling whatever is there. Right? Ultimately, time is there, because then for there to be action, there has to be time. Right? Because all action takes time. Right? Okay, so there's only certain times you can enjoy certain things. So Krishna is that time, right? The whatever is the body suitable for it, it has to match, right? Because you can't have let's say you have an apple, nice apple, really good quality apple, okay? And you have a dog. You understand? Wrong body. The scriptures for proclaiming karma, because you have to have the authority for it, because if you want good results, you have to follow the shastra. Right? As the places for giving enjoyment, because not every place gives, just like that there's not a time, there's also place, right? Time, place, and circumstance. So the circumstance is that particular body. Causes of transformation means what's going to actually create the mechanics that make it transform. Right? You want something to transform. Right? Does that make sense? You want some raw ingredients to turn into dinner. Yes. Right? So there has to be a cause why that happens. Right? It's not just because you want it to. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And then the rules for creating enjoyment. So then any rule that is there, how that will be there, how these things go on, how you apply it, all that has to be there. He is these things. So you can't whimsically do whatever you like. People will say they can, but it doesn't exist. It really doesn't. Like that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if that was the thing, then all the artsy people would be the happiest people in the world. Because it's all whim and all this, and let's do that, and oh, we did that yesterday, and oh, why, it's so boring, and all that kind of jazz. But if you meet them, they're really, really miserable people. They'll talk about how nice and great everything will be, but otherwise, when there's no one looking, they're miserable. Right? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Some accept swarga, the time of enjoyment, the scriptures proclaiming karma, and the body attained by karma to be eternal and supreme. Swabhav refers to the... Right, so he's going through these things because then we see in the Karmakandis, they're accepting these as eternal. Right? Principles, yes, they're always going to be there. But the actual fact of the thing themselves, no. So, yeah. Swabhav refers to the cause of transformation into devatas and other forms. Dharma, the code of rules, is the cause of enjoyment. When Maya is agitated, I take on many forms, which are products of my Maya Shakti. Therefore, the conclusion is that the jiva should strive for freedom from the bondage of karma. Because it's Krishna's controlling it. That's the thing, is those who are enjoyers, they're not really counting God in on all of this. Because if he is, it kind of like makes it not quite as fun. You know what I'm saying? Let us say, someone wants to do an activity. And why are they doing that activity? Because it is, something that they have an idea will make them happy. Right? So the whole point is they want to do it. By their arrangement, they have those facility. They have the opportunity. They make the endeavor. Transformation is there. And so then they feel very good about that, what they've done, and then what facility they have now that they can enjoy. Right? But now if you look at it, that all those elements are actually Krishna, then how much fun is it for that so-called, you know, spontaneous person? You understand? Because they're thinking, oh, I'm just doing it like this. But it'll only work if you do it like that.
No choice.
Yeah, you don't have a choice of something else. Right? Does that make sense? It doesn't work. You can't take the cauliflower and stuff it into the toaster. It won't work. Does that make sense? There is rules how it works. So Krishna is all those rules. Everything, how the material world functions, is Krishna. It's not something else. So that's why for the devotees, then they always have Krishna, and then they're always very happy. But for the non-devotees, they're thinking because it's not Krishna, that's what's going to make them happy. Right? So the devotees can see everything in connection to Krishna because it's Krishna's rules. They follow the rules to please Krishna. But for the materialist, their idea is if I do it my way, that's how I'm going to be happy. Right? Does that make sense? Because that always comes down. It's going to be my way. So, yeah. But unless your way happens to be in line with Shastra. Like, but so people will, even though they don't have, I always thought it was a very interesting thing with the laborers. So there's a big group, 20 guys, they're all doing the bamboo work. And one of the guys, the head labor, but in their village, he's not necessarily, he's the main guy, and they're all from the same village. They're just working together. He just arranged it and all this. And so, something has to get done. So then he won't say, okay, you do this, you do this. He'll be there working, and not without even looking, he'll go, somebody needs to go bring another piece of bamboo. There'll be dead silence for, I don't know, some time, like 30 seconds or that. Then after 30 seconds, the guy who knows that he's the one that's supposed to do it, then he'll go, Jai. Means I'm going. Right? Not Jai all glories. Jai means Jachi. Yeah, means like that, you know, so. And then, but he won't go immediately. He'll finish whatever he's doing, very importantly, you know, just exactly like that. And then he'll go. Because there's that feeling that they're independent. I went because I wanted to. I volunteered. You understand? But if he hadn't volunteered, he probably wouldn't be there the next day. But that feeling is given. Does that make sense? So Krishna just does that. People do it however they want to do it. As long as how they want to do it is in line with the scriptures, it will work. If it's not in line with the scriptures, it won't work. Does that make sense? So there's something, the principle's in line, though the detail may not be. But whatever it is, whatever they use, there'll be a reaction for that. So improperly done things will get a reaction, even though you see, oh no, they got a result. But then what about the other aspects? Does that make sense? Yeah, just because we don't see immediately results, then we can't appreciate. But after some time, you'll see it. You know, hence the saying, I told you so. Like that. Because after some point, then it becomes obvious.
Yes. There is a tendency to rebel about, to lose.
Yes, that's the whole thing. But Krishna, there isn't anything that's not Krishna. So those who accept it, then they'll do. But even you see the Karmakandis, they you know, they're very pious. They still don't want to accept that God's the one controlling it all.
Yes.
Okay. And even if it is, then he has to do it. I want, he has to. I did my karma, now he has to give. Rather than, no, he's all these things. He doesn't, but because you followed his rules, then out of kindness he gives. But you'll only get the mundane. You won't get spiritual.
But is there any step to fully surrender?
Yes, means if you want to follow this process, then you're talking about thousands and millions of lifetimes. It's called the slow path.
Yes.
And so slow means slow. Because it means from, you know, from us, then it's when it's going to be slow. You know, from Brahma's perspective, it's not so slow like that. But it's there. The quick path is that you try to, in this lifetime, surrender and like that. So you take it at what speed you can. But you have to try to understand that it should. You should try to finish it before you die.
Yes.
Like that. And since you don't know when you're going to die, then as quickly as possible.
Yes.
You know, like it said, I think that Niti says, make money like you're going to live forever. And practice spiritual life like you're going to die the next moment, like that. That'll make it work. Because if you think you're going to die the next moment, you won't do business.
Right?
You know, you think you're going to live forever, then you got so many plans. Like that. That's the.
So. We have seen so many different terms, you know, like in, let's say like for dharma, when you say following the rules. So because these karmakandis are the materialist, they follow dharma because they want to enjoy. So that is, we can say that that is adharma. But real dharma,
that is adharma.
Yeah,
but real that dharma is adharma based on what?
Real dharma is connection to Krishna and doing.
Yes, yes. Means pleasing Krishna, that's actual dharma, because that's the sad dharma. It's eternal. The material dharma, then that's considered asad.
Mm.
Right? But within the asad, then you can have that which is following Shastra and that which is not. Verses 35 to 37. Sri Uddhava asked about Nitya Bhadha and Nitya Mukta. Let's see what happens. Sri Uddhava said, O my Lord, a living entity situated within the material body is surrounded by the modes of nature and the happiness and distress that are born of activities caused by these modes. How is it possible that he is not bound by this material encirclement? It may also be said that the living entity is ultimately transcendental and has nothing to do with the material world. Then how is he ever bound by material nature? Right? So, in other words, how could you ever get out because you're doing activities with, you know, under the modes of, or within the control of the modes of nature? So how could you never always, Krishna's telling you how to get liberated, and what's the sadhana of that, but then how would you ever actually apply it that it would work? Because you have to work within the modes, so therefore, or at the same time is that if the living entity is being transcendental by nature, that's the nature of the jiva, how could they actually have anything to do with the material world and get bound? Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. According to you, the goal is liberation. You meaning Krishna. So this is Uddhava speaking. Right? This is achieved by practice of bhakti, jnana, and vairagya. When that takes place, a person is said to be liberated. But I do not understand this. Even though Dattatreya and Bharata were liberated, they maintained gross and subtle bodies, right? So that means then you're dealing with the modes. Since we hear that they ate, slept, and walked about. If that is so, why is such a jiva not bound by the gunas since he exists within the gunas of his body? Right, because they have their nature, they function according to that. If you say the uncovered jiva is not bound up because he is like the ether in his spiritual state, then bondage should not have occurred at all. How was the uncovered jiva bound up in the body? Right. So, these ones that are liberated, but they're functioning within the body, why aren't they bound? And if the soul is liberated, how did it get, if it's pure, how did it become bound in the first place? Sri Uddhava continued, O my Lord, Achyuta, the same living entity, is sometimes described as eternal. Conditioned. And at other times as eternally conditioned, and at other times as eternally liberated. I am not able to understand. Therefore, the actual situation of the... I am not able to understand, therefore, the actual situation of the living entity. You, my Lord, are the best of those who are expert in answering philosophical questions. It just struck me, because without really serious intonation and pauses, you can't make English work.
Yes.
So then, how technical is a language as Hungarian that they speak it in a straight monotone? No inflections, no nothing. But, you know, everybody seems to understand, so. Right? So it definitely has more grammar in that than English. Right? No?
And sometimes to the foreigners, it sounds that the foreign language, it sounds like it has no.
No, but it has one. Da 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 da. But that, it doesn't matter what sentence it is.
Yeah, but they look like that. Also.
Yeah, and they also just look that bad. So there's no facial. They're not. In other words, Italians would not be able to function in Hungary. They would not be able to learn the language, speak it, nothing like that. Okay. You, my Lord, are the best of those who are expert in answering philosophical questions. Please explain to me the symptoms by which one can tell the difference between a living entity who is eternally liberated and one who is eternally conditioned. In what various ways would they remain situated, enjoy life, eat, evacuate, lie down, sit, or move about? Right, so we have a similar question. When you understood about the nature and importance of transcendence, Arjuna asked the same kind of question. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. If one is bound by identity with sense objects and senses, then by destruction of the sense objects, senses and gunas, one becomes liberated even in the presence of the gunas. How should I understand this? What quality should I seek in a liberated person? Since existing, enjoying, eating, evacuation, sleeping, sitting, and going are actions related to material identity. Since perfectly... Oh. It's like crickets. The warmer it is, then the pitch goes up, and the quickness and all that, and when it gets cold, it goes down. And you remember, it's cold, then the cold? Everyone's like more subdued, and that gets warm, then they all like it.
It is not Hungarian.
No, that's not Hungarian. Definitely not. Since perfectly liberated persons like Dattatreya and Bharata carry out daily activities like the completely bound jivas, they seem to be the same. This is confusing. It is impossible for me to understand the difference. You must tell me. Right, so that then, you know, ends this chapter, and then the discussion will be the next.
Yes. Right? Actually, in this chapter and many chapters, it is mainly the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. There is a special reason, or it's...
You wanted somebody else's commentary?
No, I was just thinking, because the Bhagavad Gita is Srila Prabhupada, you can say, dedicate the Gita to Baladeva Vidyavasana. And here it's a mainly commentary. Is it like more can say Baladeva Vidyavasana is more like encouraging, and Vishwanath is less encouraging.
Well, Vishwanath tries to make things clear, And so then in making it clear, then sometimes the points that are made, we may be inspired or not. But it means he's not using that tone to whatever you're doing, then it's great as long as it's connected to Krishna. He'll point that out. But he'll point it out that that's mixed devotional service, and it won't be as effective as if we use pure devotional service.
Yes, yes.
But the main thing is he commented on the whole Bhagavatam. So others, like 10th Canto, you saw a lot of commentaries, because many only commented on 10th Canto.
Okay.
So not everybody deals with all. And I think some is up through 10, but not 11 and 12. So I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's is one of the commentaries that is on all the whole Bhagavatam. And I think Sridhar Swami also.
Okay.
Like that.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Conclusion. On the path of materialism, there is certainly no uninterrupted or natural happiness. According to his own nature and work, a Vaishnava should follow the code of Varnashrama in a spirit free from motivation. When he has come to understand something of the truth of the self, he should give up material work performed out of duty and simply engage himself in the service of the bona fide spiritual master. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the activity is given up, but you're giving up doing it because it's the duty rather than it's what the spiritual master wants done to please Krishna.
Yes, yes.
Does that make sense? So let's say one's cooking lunch every day. So one's cooking lunch every day out of duty, because that's what one does. But then it comes to the point where you're cooking because then you can cook for Krishna. And Krishna eats lunch, so therefore you cook for Krishna. Does that make sense? So this is taking a higher position where people are willing to follow duties. So those who aren't willing to follow duties should come to the platform of following duties, and then they should follow duties only because it pleases Krishna. Right? Yes. Only the bona fide spiritual master is capable of demonstrating pure knowledge of the self. A purified soul should see that because the conditioned souls were dedicated to sense gratification and falsely accepted the objects of sense pleasure as truth, all of their endeavors are doomed to failure. That material happiness of which we hear, such as promotion to heavenly planets for celestial enjoyment, is just like that material happiness we have already experienced. Right? Because what we've already experienced is what we heard about before we experienced it. So something we haven't heard, we think it must be great. But all the things we did hear about and we did experience aren't so great. Right? Both are polluted by jealousy, envy, decay, and death. Thus, there is no possibility that one who is attached to the fruits of his material work can achieve any substantial goal in life. Now, that's just a position. That's why these great personalities, then they have that compassion on everybody. Because they see as no matter what they're doing, no matter how great or special, they're still not going to achieve any substantial goal in life. Right? So, remember back a little bit before, then the acharyas were pointing out that we see that sometimes, or somebody says regular thing, that materialists, the big materialists, the great materialists, then they take them as a great example, they glorify them, they follow they think what they're doing, then that's what we should do. You know, their activities we do, their goals we do. Does that make sense? But that will only just keep you in the material world, because whatever they're doing, no matter how great or small, it's not going to achieve any substantial goal in life. That's the thing. So these pure self, you know, who have demonstrated pure knowledge of the self, they see like this. Therefore, they're compassionate and they try to help them.
Yes.
Like that. So whoever's interested, then they speak.
Yes.
That's the whole idea. Not that, oh no, but he's famous, and if we, you know, hang out with him, then that's really big preaching. But it's only big preaching if somehow or another there's an effect that others see that they've taken up Krishna consciousness and become influenced by that. But if all that happens is we get influenced by it, then what's the point?
They make a good preaching.
Yes, the materialistic preaching. Okay, chapter 11. The symptoms of conditioned and liberated living entities, right? So then he's asked that question there, and then it naturally, it's a new topic. So then it goes into the next chapter. Does that make sense? That's the unique thing of the Vedic, how they divide up chapters. The question doesn't have to come in the chapter. If it's a continuation of the same subject, various angles, then if it comes there, it's natural. But now that question now changes. It's not a complete change, it's a continuation, but it's taking a new angle. Yes. Then it ends up as a new chapter. Mm. Yeah. Chapter 11, the symptoms of conditioned and liberated living entities. Pratigya, once you give up the false conception of material variety that one imposes upon the soul, and thus cease one's material existence. Yeah. Chapter 11 summarizes questions and answers. Sri Krishna answers Sri Uddhava's question 11:14 from the previous chapter regarding Nitya Vadha and Nitya Mukta in verses 1 to 25. Sri Uddhava asked Sri Krishna question 11:15 of Srimad Bhagavatam in 11:26 and 27. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, what type of person do you consider to be a true devotee? And what type of devotional service is approved by great devotees as worthy of being offered to your lordship? My dear ruler of the universal controllers, O Lord of Vaikuntha and Almighty God of the universe, I am your devotee, and because I love you, I have no other shelter than you. Therefore, please explain this to me." Sri Krishna answers this question in verses 29 in this chapter to verses 15 in the next. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 11th chapter, the Lord explains the difference between the liberated and conditioned jivas, the qualities of the devotee and the angas of bhakti. Sardartha Darshini 11:11:1. In the previous chapter, Uddhava presented questions regarding conditioned and liberated souls. In his reply, the Almighty Lord Sri Krishna states that although the spirit soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, on account of his infinitesimal nature, he falls into contact with material energy, which causes him to accept the covering designations of the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Thus, the soul has been bound up since time immemorial. But when he achieves the shelter of pure devotional service, he becomes designated as eternally liberated. Transcendental knowledge is therefore the cause of the living entity's liberation, and ignorance is the cause of his bondage. Both knowledge and ignorance are produced by the Maya's energy of Lord Sri Krishna and are his eternal potencies. The living entities who become attracted to the modes of nature are bewildered by false ego, which causes them to see themselves as the enjoyers of misery, confusion, happiness, distress, danger, and so on. In this way, they meditate upon such states of being, although in the real or spiritual world, these things do not exist. Right? So this is material knowledge. Right? So that's the point. Striving for material knowledge, then even the pure soul will become bound. Right, so that's why that's not the important thing. If knowledge is useful in Krishna's service, that's worth learning. But just to say that material knowledge itself has a value, that will keep you here. Right? You know, and the situation may not be great. I mean, there are those in the past that got kicked out of a very nice, like, garden situation because they strove for material knowledge. Yeah. Yes. Both the jiva, individual soul, and the supersoul reside within the same body. The difference between them is that the almighty supersoul, being fully cognizant, does not indulge in enjoying the fruits of material work, but remains simply as a witness, whereas the infinitesimal conditioned jiva, being ignorant, suffers the consequences of his own work. The liberated jiva, in spite of being within a material body, because of the remaining reactions of his past activities, does not become disturbed by the happiness and suffering in the body, right? Because if all karma is gone, you won't have a body. And so devotional service is performed with the body, so therefore whatever's left over from one's previous activities, that's the body you function in. Right? He sees such bodily experiences in the same way that a person who's just awakened from a dream sees his dream experiences. On the other hand, although the conditioned living entity is by nature not the enjoyer of the happiness and miseries of the body, he imagines himself to be the enjoyer of this bodily experience. Just as a person in a dream imagines his dream experiences to be real. That's another way of saying it's imagination. Right? Because it's just, you're imagining that it connects to you, that it's actually, you know, right. Just as the sun reflected upon water is not actually bound up in the water, and just as the air is not confined to some particular segment of the sky, similarly, a detached person takes advantage of his broad outlook on the world to cut off all his doubts with the sword of appropriate renunciation, yukta vairagya. Right? So that's appropriate renunciation. This means you're reducing down to just what is necessary, and that's what is engaged in the Lord's service. But to just say, no, yukta vairagya, I can do anything I want, what I want, how I want, that's not yukta vairagya. Because where's the vairagya, right? One's doing it because one's attached to it. And where's the yukta? Where is it connected to Krishna? And so it's a very specific term. Yes.
Is it correct to say we have nothing to do with this world?
We? No. It means, what do we have to do with it? What could we have to do with it? It means the soul not being the body or subtle body, then what's and all the activities that go on in this world are all based on the gross and subtle bodies interacting with the other aspects of matter through the modes of nature. So we're not the modes, we're not the body, we're not the subtle body. So we're not, you know, anything we perceive. We actually don't have anything to do here. But you can be Krishna conscious here because it is Krishna's energy. And you can see it connected to Krishna. So in that way, then you can engage what's here. That's yukta vairagya in Krishna's service. But that person is not actually technically here. Right? Because the material is a designation. It's not actually specifically defined by place. It's defined by consciousness. As you see up to now, no space or time has been discussed up to now. But we've been discussing the conditioned living entity. Like that, yeah. Since his life force, senses, mind, and intelligence have no tendency to fix themselves on sense objects, he remains liberated even while situated within the material body. Right? Because the mind, intelligence, they don't fix on anything that's connected with sense gratification. That doesn't mean senses aren't engaged. They're not engaged separate from Krishna. Sense gratification means the engagement of the senses that are not connected to Krishna. But if you engage in the senses that's connected to Krishna, that's not material. Regardless of whether he is harassed or worshipped, he remains equipoised. He is therefore considered liberated even in this life. A liberated person has nothing to do with the piety and sin of this world, but rather sees everything equally, because both the piety and the sin will keep you here. So when we're always talking, no, everybody has to be nice and good and do the right thing and all that, you know, then we can, you know, have community, then it'll be wonderful, then everyone will be inspired in devotional service. But what did the first part of the discussion point have to do with the last? Everyone's good, everyone's nice, cooperating, what has that got to do with the devotional service? Right? So unless you connect it, it's not connected. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we always have to be very, very careful that we're not getting distracted by this. Doesn't mean that there isn't nice stuff. We see all the qualities of the devotees are all nice. But they're nice because they're connected to Krishna. And the karmis are only nice because they think that by being nice, that's better. It has nothing to do with pleasing Krishna. And so just as now they're nice, after some time they won't be nice. And the guy who's not nice, after some time he'll be nice. A self-satisfied sage does not praise or condemn anyone. He does not speak uselessly to anyone and does not fix his mind on material things. Rather, he is always merged in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So everything is just whether it's devotional service or not. So people aren't, then the problem is that they're not. So rather than that's wrong, it's how can they now be engaged in Krishna's service, right? It is wrong, but that's not the point. The point is devotional service is what the living entity is supposed to do.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It's always the primary thing.
Yes, it's always the primary thing. So it's a matter of the, it's, in other words, you could say it's a matter of the motive.
Yes.
Right? Because devotional service or not devotional service, that's the spiritual platform. The material platform is right and wrong.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's how it works.
Yes. Guna.
Huh?
Guna.
Yes, then it's under the gunas. Then, depending upon your mode, then you'll say this is right or wrong. Rather, he is always merged in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in the eyes of fools, he seems to be a speechless, crazy person. Because he only talks if there's a need to talk. There's no one, you know, not your, no opportunity for discussing spiritual subject matter. Why will they talk?
Yes.
He was just moving around like everyone thinks he's crazy, but then by seeing the symptoms, Yadu Maharaj then sees that here's a great personality, goes up to him, asks him some spiritual questions, then you see he talks very nicely. You know, he's not talking all kinds of, you know, weirdo babbling or stuff like that. Even if someone has studied or even taught all the different Vedic literatures, if he has not developed pure attraction to the service of the Personality of Godhead, he has accomplished nothing beyond his own labor. Right? So all that endeavor and difficulty to study and teach all the Vedic literatures, that's the only benefit he gets. Right? So, one should study only those scriptures in which the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his enchanting pastimes, and the nectarian topics of his very incarnations are scientifically discussed. Thus one attains the highest good fortune. However, by studying scriptures other than these, one simply acquires misfortune.
Mm-hmm.
So, unless you, it has an actual connection to being used in Krishna's service, then there's no need to study something. But what one would prefer, so one can do that for the the occupational skills you have. But it only has that social benefit, right? Those will give you maintenance.
Yes.
But the point is why are you maintaining yourself? You're only maintaining yourself so that you can go out and work, right? And buy the money from work, then you can maintain yourself so you can go out and work. Then what's the point, right? So it has to be that you're able to be engaged in Krishna's service. But those things to actually put your energy into is those things that by hearing about them, then their glorification of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord with his devotees in pure love. That's the scriptures to discuss. That's what you study. The other ones you familiarize yourself with so you can use them. You know, it's like you buy something and on the box it tells you how to use it. You know, you don't sit down and make a whole study out of it and that. You just read it, understand, and use it. So. With full determination, one should properly understand the identity of the soul and give up false identification with this material body. He may then offer his heart at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the reservoir of all love, and attain real peace. When the mind is carried away by the three modes of nature, it can no longer meditate properly on the transcendental supreme truth. After many lifetimes, faithful persons who have performed Vedic sacrifices for acquiring religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, finally engage in hearing, chanting, and constantly thinking of the Supreme Lord's all auspicious pastimes, which purify the entire universe. Right? So, after many lifetimes. So that's why it's recommended you try to finish it this life. Such persons then achieve the association of a bona fide spiritual master and the saintly devotees. After that, by the mercy of the spiritual master, they begin to follow the path set out by the standard authorities of spiritual life, the Mahajanas, and become actually perfect in realization of their own true identity, right? So, by being sincere and trying to understand, perform your duties properly, then you may come in contact with the bona fide spiritual master and the saintly devotees. You actually want to know what's going on. I'm doing all the duties nicely, but, you know, what's the benefit? You know, then one comes. And then by following the path they give, that will give your true identity. Right? That's why in following the path of developing your true identity, you don't want to muddle that up with demanding, you know, the right to act according to your condition. And that's actually as important, if not more important, than pure devotional service. In fact, we'll call that yukta vairagya, though it is not in any way, shape, or form. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why it says here one's own true identity. Otherwise, one gets distracted. Yes.
All right, so basically most everybody, they receive their true identity.
Yes.
Said,
yes. Yes.
But we can't really act on this identity.
Yes.
So with the devotee, it seems like, you know, we have two, three, or many identities, and it's very confusing, you know. And then...
But that's what the philosophy is for, is to hold all that together. Because... Basically, you say you have as many identities as you have desires. Because to fulfill any desire, therefore you have to have a particular identity in what situation. Remember that before Krishna said all those things. You have to be the proper instrument at the proper time in the proper place, performing the proper activities to get the proper result. So unless you know all that, so all that itself you could consider as an identity because you have a position within it. So as much as you see yourself in these different things, then you have all these different... So that's not because of devotional service. That's already going on. Devotional service only makes you aware of it. Right? Because otherwise, before, we were like that, if not more, but we're thinking it's just perfectly normal. Now we start to understand that's not normal. Right? It's the soul actually has a different identity. So then... It's a matter of, that's why then the emphasis is on duties. And that's why this whimsical, whatever I feel like, won't actually gain you anything. Because the true identity be I'm servant of Krishna, then being servant of Krishna, I have to be engaged in Krishna's service. That's what would be the natural position. That's what you'd want to do. Therefore, what conditioning do I have that I can engage? What are the tools at my disposal? But we also have to remember is even we have those tools, the tools themselves are Krishna. How the tools are to be used is Krishna. What results they can get is Krishna. And having gotten that result, it should be offered to Krishna in devotion. So that's where then the whimsicalness has to be dropped. It's not that, because someone will, like what you're mentioning here, but, you know, I'm a family person, so therefore I can't just give everything up. I have to, you know, perform my duties and do all these things. But that's not what this is saying. What it's saying is you don't, to do the duties, you don't have to identify with it. Right? To use the car, you don't have to become the car. Right? In fact, the more you understand the difference between you and the car and what the car can do exactly and all the different elements of the car and what effect they're having, the more you can actually operate the car. But the more you're just attached to it and therefore you don't think, that's where accidents happen. You understand? So due to the mode of ignorance, then we'll reverse the thing. We'll start saying that just doing what, you know, I need to do is then being real rather than doing what actually is your duty. Because doing your duties, that means, why is it, okay, I'm a householder, I have all these things, I have bills to pay, I have, you know, kids to take to the dentist, I have, you know, all these different stuff to do. But we're quoting that we have to do duties. So it's the duty that's important. But we're saying that I therefore I have to have this identity and do it in this way and this. No, you don't. You have duties to perform, and according to your ability, then you'll perform those duties. Then performing that duty, it will get done. But the duty also includes the gross and subtle. So generally, the modern doesn't, when it says rules, it doesn't include the attitude. And if it has the attitude, there's no rules. Right? That's the basically your two groups. Those that follow rules, you know, and don't care about the mood, and then those who it's all about mood and don't care about rules, because the mood is the most important. Right? But the point is the Vedic is you follow the rules with the right attitude. So it's not just not the knowledge and skill, but the attitude is also the third aspect. And if you don't have that, plus you have to know where you're going. What's the actual goal? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is you have to know. Because if you know what you're doing, just like you say, think, okay, we're going to go out for a drive. What's the purpose of going out for the drive? To just, okay, you want to just relax, get on the open road, you know, get out of the hustle and bustle, you know, by going fast in the car. How that matches, I am not sure, but whatever it is, it's popular. So, if you don't know that, then you'll just get in the car and start to drive. What if you turn down the wrong street and it's a traffic jam? Now, how does going out on the drive actually have any benefit? Right? It won't. You'll just get more and more frustrated. So you actually have to know. It's not just that. You have to know what you're doing, what the skills, what's going on, and all that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that by following the duties, you actually accomplish all the things that you feel I must get done, that I identify with. But if you only focus on the identity, there's no guarantee that you're going to get any of it done. You may, but even if you do, death is still coming. Disease is still there. Lack of satisfaction, because nothing of the gross and subtle body can satisfy the soul. That's why we took up Krishna consciousness in the first place. Right? Krishna remembers all of that. We tend to somehow or another not. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is they're making their case based on one thing, but then actually switching to something that won't actually fulfill that point. So like we were saying, within their own philosophy, they defeat themselves. Does that make sense? Is that just like, I want to go to the market, I can go in a dhoti, I don't have to go in cargo jeans. But because of their identity, they have to go in the cargo jeans. But they said, no, but you have to go to the market. They have duties like going to the market. So fulfill your duty. And so if you're a devotee, you're a servant of Krishna, therefore you want to fulfill that as a servant of Krishna. So unless there's some benefit by going in you know, karmic clothes, then only it'll work. Otherwise, then what has that got to do? Then say, no, I'm attached to these things, and unless I do these things, then my mind gets disturbed. And so that way, if my mind's not disturbed and I do the things that I like to do, dress how I like, eat how I like, my mind will be peaceful, then I can do some service in whatever time's left. And that's better than nothing. Then that's also perfectly fine. But let that person say that. Right? But due to false identity, false ego, they won't say that. They'll try to make all things equal. Claiming that it's also one part of our philosophy. Is that, are we getting anywhere? Yes. So the main thing is that it's always said that, no, but we have to do this, but those are duties. So perform those duties in the mode of goodness without attachment. You don't have to be attached to pay the mortgage. You can just pay the mortgage.
The difficulty is you're paying the mortgage, I mean, we pay the mortgage for 30 years, and then it's an identity, you know, I can't leave this house, it's my house, I've invested so much energy into it. It's not the mortgage we attach to, but it's not the process, but because we invested so much energy, you know, into that process, the identity seems to be becomes natural, and then if something happens to the house, it's like, you know, it's like cutting my own body.
Yes, no, that's there because we identify with it, and that's why misery comes. That's what was said before. So you can do that, but it says that one simply acquires misfortune. That's just what happens. So know that that's what happens. But the point is if it's duties and we're doing out of motive goodness, okay, so then in all the bills or all the ways to spend the money, is the mortgage going to be on the top of the list? Means by duties. Is it going to be high on the list? No? What's going to be on the top of the list? That new Gucci bag?
No.
That's what I'm meaning, is that people, because they're not functioning in duties, they don't even end up necessarily paying the mortgage. They use the money for something else stupid. So the point is duties, you have to pay you pay for where you're staying, pay for your food, pay for clothes, medicine, these things. And when all that's done, then you can, use it for something else. But they tend to not, because it's not being done in the mode of goodness. So,
is that mode of goodness really, can we really do that without connecting with Krishna? Krishna is the...
Can you really do it without connecting with Krishna? For us, probably not.
It sounds more like...
If your last name is like Iyer or Iyengar, you possibly could.
It sounds a little impersonal, just do it out of duty.
The name sounds impersonal.
Do it out of duty, but as a soul, we always want to do it for somebody.
Yes, but the choice is who you're going to do it for. Is it going to be connected to Krishna, or is it not? Because you can connect it with the house and getting this big house and the family and all this and then like this and that. But probably I don't want to make people feel bad. So, the whole thing is, but there's a temporary nature. That's the whole point. You pay for it for 30 years, but the kids grow up and leave way before that. You know what I'm saying? But for us, it's like that thing. It's the whole thing and the family and that, but they're all gone. Well, it depends on how. Yeah, that's it. Depends how big the house is.
Yeah, but you were talking about do it out of duty, but for whom? Because you said that's the mode of goodness. But then, if we are not devotees, let's say we are not devotees, then can one actually act out of duty just for the sake of duty without actually?
No, but what's the point? Where will you go with this? Once you get your answer, what's your next question? What's the therefore? You know what I'm saying? Because this is like a whereas, therefore. So what's the therefore?
It's like impossible to not do it for somebody.
Yes, so we do it for Krishna.
But if we do it for somebody who is not Krishna, then how can that be the mode of goodness?
But why is that a discussion? That means, that's my question. Why would that be the question? Since when do those from backgrounds that aren't necessarily coming in the traditional Vedic lines, why would we be worried about performing activities in the mode of goodness when all we've ever known is passion and ignorance? Right? So it's because we are performing activities in pure goodness that will then be able to situate us in goodness on a bad day. It means we're only going to get to goodness because of devotion and service. So that's the context here. It means we are discussing these aspects of liberation and these kind of things, but we have to remember this is 11th canto. So this isn't the beginning of the discussion. This is the end. So the end means we've already accepted that only through devotional service can we do. Is there any benefit? And so we're looking at it that as devotees that we're doing these things, and that's where the mode of goodness means I'm performing it because that should be done. Best is you're doing it out of pure love for Krishna, but at least you're doing because you're supposed to do it. like that. But the identity is I'm servant of Krishna, because if the identity is I'm servant of Krishna, then it tends to start to adjust your perspective of I have all this work to do. Because who's this I? What is this work for? And you know, you say, okay, family person, but the point is who does the family belong to? Souls belong to Krishna. Okay, you can say you can have the bodies, but is that what you want? You know? Does that make sense? So it's like you go in the morning and try to wake somebody up and they don't wake up. You know, you're not really fully satisfied. The body's there. You know? Does that make sense? You know, or the person sitting in the next room watching the TV and basically kind of like a variety of vegetables. Right? And so we're not actually satisfied. Is that? You understand? So the point is that the soul belongs to Krishna. All it is the 11th canon just saying the facts of just what's there. So it only takes on that hard, kind of dry aspect if we're not seeing it connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it always has to be connected to Krishna. That's the only way it can be done. Even by the karmis, how long can they maintain it? That's the point of Jaimini, is they can take it up, but with time, then things transform. They won't be able to do. Does that make sense? Having heard these instructions from Lord Krishna, Uddhava further desired to understand the characteristic of a factually saintly person and the different aspects of devotional service. Devotional practice. Thought he would start off by saying Om. He was making some, going to chant some mantra. Lord Krishna replied that a real sadhu or Vaishnava is qualified with the following characteristics. He is merciful, non-envious, always truthful, self-controlled, faultless, magnanimous, gentle, clean, non-possessive, helpful to all, peaceful, dependent on Krishna alone, free from lust, devoid of material endeavor, steady, in control of the six enemies of the mind, moderate in eating, never bewildered, always respectful to others, never desirous of respect for himself, sober, compassionate, friendly, poetic, expert, and silent. The principal characteristic of a sadhu is that he takes shelter of Krishna alone. That's the main. So that's the main one, and all the others are then the ornaments to that one. Right? Because depending upon the situation, you can manifest one or the other. But the surrender to Krishna, that can always be manifest.
Now, is it the same list as the 26 qualities?
Good chance this is where it's from. could be. Yeah. Yeah, it's always nice to know. So how did they come up with the list? Well, what do you think of that one? Nah, what about this one? Yeah. One who engages exclusively in Krishna's service and understands him as the limitless, indwelling Lord who comprises eternity, knowledge, and bliss is the topmost devotee. The practice of devotional service includes 64 kinds of activities. Among these are 1 through 6, seeing, touching, worshipping, serving, glorifying, and offering obeisances to the deity of the Lord and his pure devotees. 7, developing attachment for hearing the chanting of the Lord's qualities, pastimes, and so on. 8, remaining always in meditation upon the Lord. 9, offering everything one acquires to the Lord. 10, accepting oneself to be the Lord's servant. 11, offering the Lord one's heart and soul. 12, engaging in glorification of the Lord's birth and activities. 13, observing holidays related to the Lord. 14, performing festivals in the Lord's temple in the company of other devotees, and with music, singing, and dancing. 15, celebrating all varieties of yearly functions. 16, offering foodstuffs to the Lord. 17, taking initiation according to the Vedas and Tantras. 18, taking vows related to the Lord. 19, being eager to establish deities of the Lord. 20, endeavoring either alone or in association with others in constructing for the service of the Lord vegetable and flower gardens, temples, cities, and so on. Okay, so Mayapur is our city. 21, humbly cleansing the temple of the Lord. And 22, rendering service to the Lord's house by painting it, washing it with water, and decorating it with auspicious signs. After this, the process of worshiping the deity of the Lord is described in brief. Oh, is that the next chapter? No. No, that's later. Yeah, you see, all these are all ones that are directly connected to Krishna. Not ones that are in support of or other aspects like that. Or ones that they themselves include all the other things. Right? Like that. Shloka Anusharana, verses 1 to 25. Sri Krishna answers about Nityabhada and Nityamukta, verses 26 to 49, the qualities and activities of a true devotee. Verses 1 to 25. Sri Krishna answers about Nityabhada and Nityamukta. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really bound up or liberated, and since I am the Supreme Lord of Maya, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I also am never to be considered liberated or in bondage." Because the living entity technically is not under the control of that, because they themselves are transcendental. And Krishna, being the Lord of Maya, he can't be controlled either, because he's the source. Some sense, yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, "At the end of the last chapter, Uddhava inquired about the liberated and conditioned jivas. Now the Lord explains that the question does not arise. It is impossible to say that a jiva is bound by the gunas which are dependent on the Lord, or that the jiva is liberated from them. Why? It arises by the inconceivable energy called avidya, related to the gunas. Thus, it is only an appearance of a relationship with the gunas, body and senses, a relationship difficult to accomplish. This is my opinion. There is no bondage, and therefore there is no liberation, since there is no bondage from which to be liberated." Right? So this avidya means that just as there's Krishna's knowledge potency, there's also his ignorance potency. And so that ignorance potency, that's related to the modes. So that's beyond the mode of ignorance. It's just, you know, not having proper knowledge. Right? Because just like, yeah, so many sense. So that's there before the living entity comes into the material world. They already have to be in that under the avidya potency, right? Sri Krishna continued, "Just as a dream is merely a creation of one's intelligence, but has no actual substance. Similarly, material lamentation, illusion, happiness, and distress, and the acceptance of the material body under the influence of Maya are all creations of my illusory energy. In other words, material existence has no essential reality." Right? Means what was here, it's there, but it doesn't have any essential reality because it's all secondary. Essential reality is Krishna.
Yes.
So now, without Krishna, then it doesn't really have any substance. It exists, but no substance.
Yes.
But when we see the actual substance, which is Krishna, see the relationship between Krishna's energy and Krishna, now then even that external energy takes on that value that of engagement in Krishna's service. Right? Mm-hmm. O Uddhava, both knowledge and ignorance, being products of Maya, are expansions of my potency. Both knowledge and ignorance are beginningless and perpetually award liberation and bondage to the embodied living beings. Right? So it's all part of Maya. It's an illusion that is there. So you're not actually even liberated. It's an illusion that, it's just like it's an illusion you're bound, it's an illusion you're liberated. So within that illusion, then you can say that you have this knowledge and ignorance and you have all these things.
Yes.
So that makes sense? Like in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The question is, what is this avidya by which the jiva develops a false relationship with the goodness? Sri Krishna answers, both vidya and avidya are my shaktis, tanu, by which liberation and bondage are produced. Vidya produces liberation and avidya produces bondage for the embodied beings. These are created by my great Shakti, Maya. Moreover, because they are aspects of Maya, metaphorically they are said to be created by Maya, but they are actually without beginning. So vidya and avidya have always been there.
Yes.
Right? Because Krishna being everything, everything's connected to him. Otherwise, what's the point of knowledge if there's no... Why do you have to define knowledge if there's no ignorance?
Yes.
Is that... Yeah.
Knowledge, this is defined at the beginning, before the material world. Vidya and avidya.
They're always there, but they don't need to... They don't necessarily need to function.
Yes.
Because everything's based on prema. So with that there, then prema includes everything else necessary.
So it is manifested only for the conditions, for the soul wanted to enjoy material world. The conditions.
No, it means they're always there, but then those who are in conditioned consciousness, they take advantage of it.
Yes.
Right? Now you have your vidya and avidya, so the spiritual world will work on the transcendent knowledge. And the material world to work on the ignorance, or the avidya, the lack of knowledge.
Yes.
But within this avidya, then it has knowledge and ignorance.
Yes. Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes. So we always have that aspect, that you have two things, but then within each one of those you have both aspects. Yeah.
Before this, again, we came across a verse where it is described that the knowledge... After the material conditioning is ceased, the knowledge also ceased to exist. In one verse. And
yes.
This verse also came. So, I think Jiva Goswami writes in connection with this, this vidya only hints you towards pure devotional service. That is the job of the vidya which the Mahamaya has.
Yes.
Then it is what we deal with is the transcendence which is...
Yes. It's not that they don't have knowledge in the spiritual world, because they have knowledge of relationships and rasa and all that. But the knowledge that's here, that by it you become bound or you become liberated, that only has a value until you're liberated.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Let's say you want to get somewhere, from, let's say, this city to another city. You require a map. Once you get to the other city, do you need the map?
No.
So that's the whole point, is this vidya then leads you to the point where you're on the transcendental platform. It has no more work. Then it's devotion. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The BBT purport states, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, the living entity may be designated as Jiva Maya, whereas matter is called Guna Maya. The living entity places his living potency, Jiva Maya, in the grip of the mundane qualitative potency, Guna Maya, and falsely dreams that he is part and parcel of the material world. Yeah, and so in other words, the ultimate virtual reality. Right? Such an artificial mixture is called illusion or ignorance. According to Srila Madhvacharya, vidya indicates the goddess of fortune, the internal potency of the Lord, whereas avidya indicates Durga, the external impotency of the Lord. Right? So then you're going to have that. So we're talking about the transcendence and then the ignorance. And then within ignorance, then you have varieties. Srila Sridhar Swami notes in this regard that although Lord has explained, prema is something that's experienced. It's not something that you can define. You can discuss symptoms, but you can't actually define it itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Means you can say the attraction of the Lord and that, because you can see those things. You can't actually give a discussion that will give you the experience or explain the experience. It's not possible. Right? But if you're associating with the devotees, hearing about Krishna, then you'll start to taste. So it's self-evident, right? Krishna reveals, but... Yes. So the difficulty comes down is that having left the shelter of the spiritual world, given up the idea that we're going to follow the Icha Shakti and serve the Lord, but we'll just the Greek Jnana and Kriya, because we like the knowledge and skills and results that we get, then all that's defined by words.
Yes.
You know, the material known as the world of names.
Yes.
You understand? So then for us, those names, the word are, is the substance.
Mm-hmm.
The word itself, not the meaning of the word.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's where the problem comes up when you have terms that have many, many applications.
Yes.
It will be confusing because for us, it's just an external form.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can it have all these different meanings? So as soon as we hear vidya, then, you know, if we're talking about it like before, is the knowledge of the material world will just bind you. And then here it's saying that, no, this is the spiritual world. So which one is it? The point is it's all these things. Because where does the knowledge here come from? It's a reflection of the knowledge there. But being reflected on material desire, it will bind you to the world. Does that make sense? But it comes from there. So the point is the same thing as using that, then you can bring yourself up. So using this material knowledge that's given the Shastra, how you can liberate yourself, that will get you to the point where then there is no more material engagement. But that's as far as it can get you. You have to have spiritual knowledge to take you beyond that. Right? So that knowledge, then that's, you think, so you see in the Vedic, even though these words are interchangeable, that's because it has so many levels it's on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You have some guy hates to cook, doesn't like to cook, but has to eat, takes a tin can, puts it on a few bricks, whatever's lying around, he gets it, lights it on fire, throws something in the can, and cooks it long enough where, at least when he stabs it with his, you know, knife, that, you know, he actually can poke the knife through it. Okay? So, now, by the definition of cooking, that you're applying heat to something to make it soft so that it's, you know, edible, right? It follows that definition. But now for someone who actually appreciates cooking, would you call that cooking? No. You understand? So that's the thing, is as you raise the consciousness, then these lower states, that's not what it's talking about anymore. So that's why you see is that it's discussed, and then we move up through these things, and then the definition seems to change, but it's not. It's just following a higher level of that.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, okay, in first grade, then the kids can take, okay, if we take two rocks here, and we take another two rocks and put them over here, how many rocks do we have? The kid will do this and that, kind of, you know, like this, work it out. Four. What will the teacher say?
Jai.
It's good. Nice. Okay, now let us say you're in, you know, a discussion on quantum physics, you know, in your last year in your undergraduate study. Are they going to say jai when you figure out 2 plus 2 equals 4? No. So therefore, it's all correct. But you have to know that there's levels to them. Does that make sense? So therefore, when we're using this, sometimes you have to see the context. Sometimes the vidya, avidya, they're both meaning material. And other times it's meaning vidya is spiritual and avidya is material.
Mm.
Right? Yes, that's why then we hear from the acharyas. Yes. Yes. Yes.
I think Srila Rupa Goswami, in that definition, Yabilasashimya Jnana Karma, he doesn't discard completely jnana and karma.
Yes.
But then he says later in the book, he says, when you start practice Raganuk Sadhana, then they don't have any place at all.
Yes.
But before that, on Vaidhi, we use partially karma and jnana.
Yes. Well, so, but what is happening here? What would be the difference? Is that it's not that the mechanics, see, because we think in mechanics, because that's all we have. right? Because the primary is love for Krishna, doing it to please Krishna. And what, how do you express that? Through mechanics. Giving up love for Krishna to, you know, in the spiritual world, they express their love through the mechanics. We think the mechanics are fabulous without the love for Krishna. And so all we have is mechanics.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So therefore, when you say that you give it up, that means the mechanics stop functioning. But the point is, in the spiritual world, that's where the mechanics are from. That's called the Jnana and Kriya Shaktis. So, therefore, in Vaidhi, you're doing it because this is the knowledge, this is the duty, this is what you're supposed to do. In Raganuga, you're doing it because this is what you want to do for Krishna. But the mechanics are exactly the same. Right? Now, if you find that one is doing mechanics that are that you're attached to, and you're connecting it to Krishna, you know, through renunciation, then that's also devotional service, but that has the aspect of mix, so that won't be pure. So then, if we're saying that this is the definition of pure devotion, then that means it has to be, it's being done for Krishna, but it still has the aspect of just being done because these are the rules. So then that's why you call it karma. Or this is the proper knowledge, that's what you call it, jnana. But in spontaneous devotional service, then these things are used because they're useful. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just like, okay, I want to fry something, therefore I have to use the frying pan. Because that's what the frying pan's for. I mean, it's like, look at the name. It's obvious. It's a frying pan. So I'm going to use the frying pan. The other is, okay, I want to fry something, so this the frying pan's the most useful. The same thing is accomplished. It's just the angle that you come from. That makes the difference between Vaidhi and Raganuga. Because Vaidhi can be pure. Otherwise, one might get the idea Vaidhi's not pure. But that verse is talking about pure devotion. So it just means we're going to start at Vaidhi because we don't have prema. Right? Because it says it's the natural relationship. Does that make sense? It's a natural relationship. Or, Prabhupada sometimes talk about the natural situation of love of Krishna. Like that. But the point is those be situated with the pure devotees, or with the devotees in the spiritual world, in your spiritual body, that's the natural situation for expressing prema. But if you don't, then you end up here. And if you do, then you develop prema and you don't end up here. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you're bringing out that that's the natural situation. Otherwise, then, that's why that point of it's not an artificial imposition on the mind.
Yes.
It's natural. Artificial means it's not natural. But love for Krishna is natural for the soul. Does that work? Okay. One may apply the terms bondage and liberation if one remembers that the living entity is eternally a transcendental fragment of the personality of Godhead. Right? So then you use, as long as you remember that. Otherwise, if you forget, then you're working with the material. But you remember the soul is servant of Krishna, then it will take on the proper qualities. Sri Krishna continued. O most intelligent Uddhava, the living entity called Jiva is part and parcel of me, but due to ignorance, he has been suffering immaterial bondage since time immemorial. By knowledge, however, he can be liberated. By transcendental knowledge, right? So there's no material knowledge that can get you liberated. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates: bondage of my shakti, the jiva, which is apparent only, is caused by my avidya shakti, which produces the imposition of the body. And liberation is produced by my vidya shakti, which removes the imposition of the body. Right, so that's that shakti is going in what in Krishna's glance. So you have that shakti, you have the living entities, and you have time. Does that make sense? Because without avidya, then how will the material world function? That's what all the jivas are functioning under. So that's the original glance. Does that make sense? Because Lord Shiva is the Lord of ignorance. So that goes, that false ego. But that's not the false ego meaning from the modes of nature. That's the false ego before the modes of nature. That's why we say eternally. Because the modes are under time. Spiritual world's not under time. So if you become conditioned while in the spiritual world, it's before the material creation. Therefore, it's eternal. Right? Because it started from the eternal platform. And when you get free from this, go back to Godhead, then you'll be on that eternal platform eternally. Right? Does that make sense? So we're making a distinction between ignorance, meaning the modes, and ignorance that is there, this avidya shakti, before you even get to the modes. Right? It's just like, where is the crime committed? In prison or outside of prison?
Outside.
Outside. Then, because of that, you end up in prison.
Yes.
Right? So you, in the free society, you act badly, you end up in prison. While you're in prison, you follow all the rules nicely and try to be a good boy. Then you get out of prison. Right? Just thinking as those, you know, the beginning of the, how you say, Bible, it had those people because it's the beginning of Kali Yuga, so there were still people that were left over from the Dwapara, and so then you see someone's living 900 years, someone 600 years, some like that. I'm just imagining them in front of the judge, and the judge hands down a sentence where, you know, three lifetimes. They'll go, three lifetimes, 600, okay, that leaves me 600. Yeah, okay, cool. You know, so. Yeah, no. Yeah. Sri Krishna, okay. That is explained in this verse. Right? So when you're under the Krishna's internal potency, you get liberated. When you're under his external potency, you get conditioned. Sri Krishna continued, "Thus, my dear Uddhava, in the same material body, we find opposing characteristics, such as great happiness and misery. That is because both the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternally liberated, as well as the conditioned soul, are within the body. I shall now speak to you about their different characteristics." Right? So there's great happiness of anything that's connected to the Lord, and there's great misery what's not connected to the Lord. So in other words, what's all are doing that gives misery, and what's connected to the Lord that gives happiness. BBT purport states, Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the characteristics of bondage and liberation may be understood in two divisions, as the difference between the ordinary conditioned soul and the eternally liberated personality of Godhead, or as the difference between conditioned and living, liberated living entities in the jiva category. The Lord will first explain the difference between the ordinary living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which may be understood as the difference between the controlled and the controller. Right? Sri Krishna continued, "By chance, two birds have made a nest together in the same tree. The two birds are friends and are of a similar nature. One of them, however, is eating the fruits of the tree, whereas the other, who does not eat the fruits, is in a superior position due to his potency. The bird who does not eat the fruits of the tree is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, by his omniscience, perfectly understands his own position and that of the conditioned living entity, represented by the eating bird. That living entity, on the other hand, does not understand himself or the Lord." Right? The Lord understands both, and the living entity doesn't understand either. "He is covered by ignorance and is thus called eternally conditioned, whereas the Personality of Godhead, being full of perfect knowledge, is eternally liberated." In this regard, Srila Prabhupada comments on Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.31. In the Vedic literature, Shruti, it is said there are two birds in one tree. One of them is eating the fruit of the tree, while the other is witnessing the actions. The witness is the Lord, and the fruit eater is the living entity. The fruit eater, living entity, has forgotten his real identity and is overwhelmed in the fruit of actions of the material conditions. But the Lord, Paramatma, is always full in transcendental knowledge. That is the difference between the supersoul and the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, the living entity, is controlled by the laws of nature, while the Paramatma, or the supersoul, is the controller of the material energy. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the difference between the bound and liberated jiva is now explained in the following 10 verses, 8 through 17. Three verses, 8 to 10, answer the question, how does the liberated person exist in the body? So now, this explanation that Krishna has given, is there any definition of time and space? Is it based on time and space? Right? So he's explained what it means. But we'll still have questions based on time and space. We want to know a process, an external process, a secondary process that therefore relates to time and space.
Yes.
You understand? Well, there is no time and space. It's simply you have taken on this mentality, then that's eternally bound. You've taken on the other mentality, that's eternally liberated. It's simply a shift in the consciousness.
Yes.
That's the difference between the two. Right? Well, we have to go through a whole song and dance, right? You know. Yeah. Sri Krishna continued. The liberated jiva, though living in the body, is not situated there, just as a person on awaking from a dream is not situated in the dream body. The bound jiva, however, though not his body, identifies with it like a person who identifies with his body in a dream. When the sense objects are received by the senses, the liberated person, who has no transformations arriving from ahankar, does not think, I am experiencing this. Right, because then I have to experience it. It's just, this is what's there. This is what's existing. Right? It's the Lord. He's controlling all these things. So there's no transformation in his body, in his consciousness, anything like that, when the senses contact the sense objects. Not that he doesn't perceive them. It's just there's no transformation. We'll see this many, many times, this word that these transcendental persons, that there's no transformation. We'll especially see it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But that's the whole point. There's no transformation because let's take Pavlov's experiment. Right? You ring the bell, what happens? Right? The dog starts salivating, right? Because they every time they ring a bell, and after ringing the bell, then they put the food in front of the dog. And they just keep ringing the bell, put the food in front of the dog. They do that for a while, and after a while they ring the bell, don't put the food, but the dog's already ready for the food.
Yes.
You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's the whole point, is that there's no transformation, because there's no concept of sense gratification. It's just, this is there, but the whole point is that, what has it got to do with Krishna? How am I related to this being offered to Krishna? And if there is, then you just offer it to Krishna. And so that the taste is not in the transformations that come from the secondary aspects. It comes from the aspect of transcendence, of yes. devotion to Krishna, the prema.
Yes.
You know, bhava, that's where the taste is.
Yes.
The secondary is only there. Not that it doesn't have. Why wouldn't it have? Sat Karyavad means Krishna, whatever he is rasa. So anything expanding from him will have something. But the point is you won't get that transcendental experience unless it's connected to him. Because it's him as a person, that's the important part. The relationship with him. Does this make some sense?
Yes.
So that's the point is that the senses are there, the senses are being engaged, but the senses, it doesn't matter to the devotee because they're not thinking, oh, you could get this or that or so many things. They'll just think, what's the service that can be rendered to Krishna? So either, like Dattatreya was saying, you just see its connection to Krishna, and that itself reminds you of Krishna, and you're absorbed. Or if it's something practical, then you'll see how this relates. And then if it's within the activities you can perform with your facility and your position, then you do. And if it's not, you don't get involved.
But there is a need of pure consciousness.
Yes, that's the whole point. That's the liberated condition. That's what Krishna's talking about. See, why would we be involved even though it's not something we should be involved with? Right? It's due to that identification that I'm the enjoyer, or I'm the controller.
Yes.
You know, I could do this, but it's not your duty. Someone else is doing it. No, but I can.
Yes. Does that make sense? Therefore, in reality, for them, there is no difference between material and spiritual. Everything is spiritual.
Yeah, there's no difference between matter and spirit. You see it all that. You can tell, you understand that this is a manifestation of a temporary aspect of Brahman. He says Brahman, material energy is always there, but its manifestation is temporary. Only the superior Brahman of the in spiritual world, that then you don't have that problem. Right? So they're on a different platform. Prabhupada said they're not actually in the material world. They don't see the material world. It's not that they don't see what you see. Right? You know, that's how we'll take it. Oh, they're another thing, then they'll be different, they'll have that wide eyes and all that kind of craziness and like that. You know? You were waiting for the pompadour?
Krishna in Bhagavad Gita talks about the curtain which is covering.
Yes.
So that curtain is when that is removed.
Yes. Means Krishna removes, but that means you see everything connected to Krishna. That's the curtain. You don't see it connected to Krishna. You remove it, you see it's connected to Krishna.
It's just about knowledge.
It's about realization, like that. It's working in this case. What he's talking here on under the vidya potency, the internal potency. So it is knowledge of that. So that will bring you to the liberated state. But what takes you beyond that is devotion, not knowledge. Yeah.
So we'll say that devotion is that higher
place
which
Krishna is talking about?
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanandi.